Robert Frost received 4 Pulitzer Prizes for poetry during his lifetime. Interesting, he was admired by the critics and the public alike. Among his most memorable poems, we would include After Apple Picking, Acquainted with the Night, Mending Wall, and Desert Places. Snow falling and night falling, fast, oh, fast. In a field, I looked into going past, and the ground almost covered smooth in snow, but a few weeds and stubble showing last. The woods around it have it, it is theirs. All animals are smothered in their lairs. I am too absent-spirited to count. The loneliness includes me unawares. And lonely as it is, that loneliness will be more lonely ere it will be less. A blanker whiteness of benighted snow with no expression, nothing to express. They cannot scare me with their empty spaces between stars, on stars where no human race is. I have it in me so much nearer home to scare myself with my own desert places. Julia Ward Howe called for the first International Women's Day of Peace. Interestingly enough, the woman who wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic had become acquainted with the ravages and terrors of war. And so in a stirring document, which you can read online, and it's worth reading, Julia Ward Howe calls for the women of the world to reject war on behalf of their sons and their husbands. Anna Jarvis was more successful. Anna Jarvis pushed the idea of a recognition of individual mothers, a mother's strength, a mother's courage. Only more recently have we accepted that mothers too possess and are sometimes possessed by their own desert places. In some sense, that recognition makes an important transition away from seeing mothers as superheroines and sentimentalized stalwarts. Now we recognize that mothers are women, are people, are persons, bearing their burdens, living their own very real lives, not fairy tale ones, the real lives that we all live. Very familiar to us today is another poem of Frost's. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other, just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grassy and wanted wear. Though as for that, the passing there had worn them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I marked the first for another day. Yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. I'm seeing that poem a lot at memorial services these days because I think it strikes a universal theme. In every life, there are those pivotal moments where we have a choice of paths to take. We choose one or the other, and it makes all the difference. Two paths, time for only one. Except at times it seems to me that the message for moms has been, two paths, no problem. You can handle both, just multitask, you're supposed to be good at it. Career and mom, sure. And still time for laundry, event planning, holiday making, religious studies, meet with teachers. Just put one foot on this path and stretch. Other foot on that path, Frost had it all wrong. Here's the last part of Frost stopping by woods on a snowy evening. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near, Between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there's some mistake. The only other sound's the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep. Miles to go before I sleep. Because I've got to get to the dry cleaner, stop by the grocery store to pick up a few things, fix dinner, and then I'll try to finish that grant I've been working on all month. Or in Gretchen's case, finish my newsletter article. A poem much studied but less popular due to its surprising length for a Robert Frost poem is The Death of the Hired Man. If we remember a little about the poem, there are two lines, not at the end, two lines in the middle of the poem that are iconic and powerful. Farm wife Mary greets farm husband Warren at the end of the day to tell him that Silas, often on farm worker, hired hand, is back again on the premises. The poem is a dialogue between Mary, Silas' sympathizer, and Warren, who's been disappointed enough by Silas in the past to want to kick him off the premises. The dialogue between these two is intriguing because it kind of sets up the dialogue that we might have in our own lives. Sometimes one person more sympathetic with the plight of another person than a significant other. Poor Silas, so concerned for other folk and nothing to look backward to with pride and nothing to look forward to with hope. Warren, she said, he's come home to die. You needn't be afraid he'll leave you this time. Home, he mocked gently. Yes, what else but home? It all depends on what you mean by home. Of course, he's nothing to us, any more than was the hound that came a stranger to us out of the woods, worn out upon the trail. Home is the place where, when you have to go there, they have to take you in. I should have called it something you somehow haven't to deserve. We know those words very well. Frost's poetry is deceptively simple. I've looked at that last line a number of times. I should have called it something you somehow haven't to deserve. It's very simple. It's beautifully elegant and eloquent. Singer-songwriter Kevin Moore, known to us as Keb Moe, wrote a particular song about home, homecoming, and mom. These are the words. Mommy, can I come home? Don't hang up before I have the chance to say I'm sorry. Are you listening? There's no excuse for what I said to you. You probably don't miss me. Mommy, can I come home? I'm tired and hungry and alone. He told me he loved me. Then he showed me how to love him before he beat me. He turned me out at night. The cars slowed down. They paid the price. Well, it wasn't easy. Mommy, the streets are cold. I'm too young to feel so old. Ballerina wallpaper across my room. Teddy bears and pillows on my bed. I passed a woman on the street who looked like you. I remember things. Everything you said. Mommy, can I come home? I've run as far as I can go. Would it be all right if I stopped by for a minute just to see you? How about tonight when Daddy's home? I really need to see you. Mommy, can I come home? Mommy, don't cry. We'll listen to Keb Moe sing, Mommy, Can I Come Home? In America, since the recession of 2007, young adults, we call them boomerang kids, have asked about coming home, and the answer has most often been yes. On March 15, the Pew Research Center released a major study showing that the percentage of Americans now living in multi-generational families is the highest it's been since the 1950s. Today, some 29% of 25 to 34-year-olds either never moved out of their parents' home to begin with or returned home in the last few years due to the economy. Among 18 to 24-year-olds, the figure is even higher. 53% of young adults in that age group live at home. Of those living at home, 78% report being upbeat about their living arrangements. Yes, I think you're anticipating this. I can't find the section of the study that records the parents' assessment. This isn't to say, of course, that the relationship between moms and kids are conflict-free. Judith Viorst has a wonderful poem written, as so many of her early works were, from a child's point of view. There's that famous book of hers, Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. Most of us can, in fact, relate to that title. Here to share Judith Viorst's poem on Mother's Day 2012 is our own Vicky Siska, Director of Adult Enrichment and Mother Extraordinaire.
Did you hear the story about Becky? Okay, am I on? Okay. All right. I'll just put it in my pocket. Okay. Mother doesn't want a dog. Mother doesn't want a dog. Mother says they smell and never sit when you say sit or even when you yell. And when you come home late at night and there is ice and snow, you still have to go back outside because the dog's got to go. Mother doesn't want a dog. Mother says they shed and always let the strangers in and bark at friends instead and do disgraceful things on rugs and track mud on the floor and flop upon your bed at night and snore their doggy snore. Mother doesn't want a dog. She's making a mistake. Because more than a dog, I think she will not want this snake. Should I stay here? Is that
better? Yeah, sure. Whatever tension we experience, and some of it is fun and funny, we acknowledge the fact that some relationships between moms and kids don't go well, and sadly, sometimes go terribly. But sometimes I think in the interest of giving equal time to the negativity, we've shied away from declaring the good news, the profound news. For example, on the battlefield, it is reported that wounded soldiers, dying men, cry out to their mothers more than to anyone else. And in last Sunday's perspective section of the Denver Post, the results were in. There was a list of 75 finalists. 6,000 readers chose their top 10 women of influence in Colorado. I have the full article here, and I'd be happy to share it with you after the service is over. Let me just say that from Diana DeGette to Pat Stryker, out of our 10 Colorado women, 7 mentioned daughters, parents, and most often their mothers for inspiring them, challenging them, and supporting them through difficult times. We also know that however much they may wish it, hope it, and dream it, too many mothers around the world, America included, can't make their wishes, hopes, and dreams come true for their children. According to the UN High Commissioner for Refugees and Refugee Families, in 2009, the last year for which we have reliable statistics, 42 million people around the world were uprooted from their homes due to conflict or persecution. Of these 42 million, 16 million were considered refugees, while 26 million were displaced within their own countries or were asylum seekers. Everything we know about statistics and reporting from these countries suggests that these figures are very low. About 45% of the world's refugees, though, are under 18 years old. Through war, earthquake, tsunami, poverty, hunger, and homelessness, mothers will stand up for their kids every day. Through bullies and acne, through rebellion, through I hate you, and you just don't get it, mom, do you? Our moms or mothers or mommies or mamas get it right a lot of the time. I can't remember who said it, where I heard it or read it, but the image has stuck with me. The teller or writer remarked that as her family was very poor, the mom would tell the kids that the ice cream man only played music when he was out of ice cream. I know it's a lie, but you know what? It's such a good one. It's so clever. It's so smart. It reminds me of what moms do for us. Because whatever they need to do, they try to cushion our pain, soften the blow, support and help in their own way, in their own special, caring, loving way. So, how do we honor our moms? We'll end the sermon with Billy Collins' wonderful poem, which Vicki found for today's service. It tells the tale.
Well, I was fortunate enough to hear Billy Collins, to meet him and to hear him recite this poem, and it's just absolutely wonderful. The other day, I was ricocheting slowly off the blue walls of this room, moving as if underwater from typewriter to piano, from bookshelf to an envelope lying on the floor, when I found myself in the L section of the dictionary, where my eyes fell upon the word lanyard. No cookie nibbled by a French novelist could send one into the past more suddenly. A past where I sat at a workbench at a camp by a deep blue lake, learning how to braid long, thin plastic strips into a lanyard, a gift from my mother. I had never seen anyone use a lanyard, or wear one if that's what you did with them, but that did not keep me from crossing strand over strand again and again until I had made a boxy red and white lanyard for my mother. She gave me life and milk from her breasts, and I gave her a lanyard. She nursed me in many a sick room, lifted spoons of medicine to my lips, laid cold face cloths on my forehead, and then led me out into the airy light and taught me to walk and swim. And I, in turn, presented her with a lanyard. "Here are thousands of meals," she said, "and here is clothing and a good education." "And here is your lanyard," I replied, which I made with a little help from a counselor. "Here is a breathing body and a beating heart, strong legs, bones, and teeth, and two clear eyes to read the world," she whispered. "And here," I said, "is the lanyard I made at camp." "And here," I wish to say to her now, "is a smaller gift, not the worn truth that you can never repay your mother, but the rueful admission that when she took the two-tone lanyard from my hand, I was as sure as any child could be that this useless, worthless thing I wove out of boredom would be enough to make us even."